Welcome to the Digital Accessibility Experts podcast from Hassle Inclusion. So this month, we're going to be talking about return on investment. So with me in the room today, I have Graham Arnfield, I have John Gooday, Rob Williams, and myself, Jonathan Hassle. People like us are forever saying that accessibility is a great thing to do. And so we just want to get under the surface of really, is it? You know, what factors do we can we pull into play to say, you know what, if you listen to us, if you do what we say, if you take some of the advice and some of the expertise that you hear on these podcasts and you make your website, your mobile app more accessible, then is it going to be good for your organization? What sort of return on investment are you going to get on things? So that's what we're about today. The first return on investment that you can get from doing accessibility is you can sleep better. As an organization, you are, if you like, insuring yourself against fines that can come from people either suing you, certainly if you're in the States, or maybe regulators coming and saying that you're doing the wrong thing. Everyone knows this one, in some ways it's been done to death by the disabled community and by the accessibility community. If you don't get your accessibility right, you will have to pay for it in other ways. John, I want to come to you. So what do we think about newer things around accessibility and litigation? We'll know that we need to get to, okay, 2.0 AA, and what about 2.1? It's come out. Do you think that you could be sued if you don't live up to 2.1?
I think it's definitely an interesting question, because I think the public sector recently came out, I think November last year, and they're using 2.1 as the kind of benchmark. So I think there's an awareness. A lot of teams, a lot of organizations haven't started to look at 2.1 in any detail yet.
Sure.
And I think one of the challenges we have around 2.1 is, A, we haven't really, I'm not sure if we've had a court case. Maybe in America someone has looked at it, but I'm not 100% sure. But I think the reality is some of the new kind of guidelines need a little bit more kind of filling out, a bit more testing, and a little bit more kind of support and advice, because I think there's some kind of ambiguity about how about some of those could be implemented. So I think there'll be a window of opportunity here. I don't know how long that will last. I think from the public side, I think it was like 2020 was the kind of the guide point in terms of getting the sites accessible. So I think it's something to watch, and I'll be very interested to see if there's any cases that come up which actually explore 2.1.
Yeah, absolutely.
So probably America would come first. So I'd be interested to kind of see what comes out. But I think to be pragmatic, I think organizations should start looking at 2.1 now. Obviously there are challenges because there's a lot more mobile-focused stuff. We're obviously not gonna today talk about some of those specifics, but I think there's quite a few challenges for anybody that's building mobile apps, and they need to start thinking about it now.
Yeah, because I think if you don't think about it now, I mean, we know that iterative product cycles is just normal. So products go through maybe sort of monthly releases, but decisions that are being made in products at the moment to say, okay, we're just gonna go 2.0. If that product's life cycle is maybe supposed to be, say, 3 years, then it could be that at the moment 2.0 is probably a reasonable bet, but actually at some point, you might have to revisit that decision that actually 2.1 is now a much better thing to do, and you've got a whole host of code and design that may not have taken it into account already.
Yeah, I think there's one particular kind of new success criteria that I would probably flag is really important to consider, and this is the fact that a site should work in both landscape and portrait. And I think that could be a really big one for organizations to think about from a budgetary point of view, a team and a resource point of view. And I think that's something that needs to be thought about.
Yeah, we've had pushback on teams on that already. You know, designers saying that actually if they're going to do landscape as well as portrait, that's going to add, you know, X percent of cost to the design of the project. Are these sensible decisions to say we're not going to do landscape at the moment? Well, we don't know. We do know that it makes commercial sense to not do landscape at the moment, but maybe in the future some of those decisions might need to be revisited. Obviously, you know, just to round things out a little, you know, we've got, you know, the usual thing that gets trotted out. You know, if you get this wrong and people do sue you, then it's not a great place to be. You know, 2,285 legal cases were tracked in the States. Also organisations that aren't just in the States but are multinational.
Was that last year, John?
And that was 2018. The thing that I wanted to kind of also note is that's all of that external stuff. That's customers. Our anecdotal evidence that is certainly here in the UK, most of the lawsuits actually from staff of an organisation taking their organisation to court. Normally, these things get settled in tribunals, but I know there's actually a lot of things happening in that sort of the area. But I mean, let's not dwell on that sort of stuff, because certainly here in the UK, you know, it's not our bread and butter. People don't do accessibility all of the time because they're going to be sued. They do accessibility because they either think it's the right thing, or they think that actually, if they don't do it, they might get embarrassed. So reputation. Beyonce recently, her production company has been accused of creating inaccessible ways for people to get tickets for her concerts. Was it Domino's Pizza as well that they're also being sued? Rob, you were looking at something. So everybody thinks that Apple is brilliant at accessibility, yeah?
Yeah.
What did you find?
I think Apple are brilliant at accessibility, mm-hmm. but they are actually being sued at the moment. I think it's their desktop site. Somebody trying to buy a product online, not being able to do that. Could have been around alt text of an image, but they couldn't actually complete the checkout process. So even Apple can get this wrong. And how does that make you feel when you hear that somebody like Apple, who do so much for accessibility, if you look at their comms around accessibility, what they've done, they've built in a screen reader to every single device that they sell, which I think is incredible. How does that make you feel? Well, it shows you that even the very best leading companies can take their eye off the ball. So it's a continuous journey for businesses. Even if they think they're getting this right, they need to continue to invest and continue to make sure that they're talking and testing with customers.
Mm. And I mean, when you get it wrong, there's presumably that the Apple PR department has to work even harder to kind of, you know, to combat these sorts of things. It's difficult to get it right absolutely everywhere. I learned this at the BBC more than anything. And it's normally the products that people really, really love, things like iPlayer when I was at the BBC, that was forever the place that people attacked from a PR point of view. And also attacked from a kind of customer service point of view. You know, I was the one who sat there and sort of had to deal with emails from people saying, it's not perfect. You know, there are various places in this groundbreaking sort of product that aren't working for me. John, I want to come to you here. I mean, customer complaints and how to kind of deal with those. I guess if you get your website right, then you don't have to deal with customer complaints.
I'm afraid life isn't that simple. However good a website is, there's always potentially going to be some challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And I think realistically, it can sometimes be a weak point in terms of how issues come up and how they're dealt with.
Yeah.
Because even if you get a perfectly accessible website, you communicate that there's a problem, you still have the issue of, does the person that receives that understand the seriousness of it? And how does an organization actually step through in a timely way to deal with that particular issue? Because
sure.
I think it's often a challenge for whether the individuals dealing with these complaints understand what people are telling them the issues are.
Yeah.
You know, have they been given proper training to actually mm-hmm. understand, okay, we have a screen reader user, will they understand what that means? Will they understand what the problem is? And will they then make sure it gets allocated the right priority and taken through the process of actually being dealt with by the right people in the organization. I mean, obviously anecdotal, but generally what the problem is there's a breakdown at some point in that process, which will more likely cause the potential of litigation, because if people don't treat an issue with seriousness and in a timely way, people tend to get annoyed and they tend to go and talk to lawyers, and that can happen. So I think there is a real kind of area here where organizations need to look at and need to take ownership of.
Yeah.
And it needs to be done, you know, with confidence to say, okay, we have some issues. What's the process? How do we deal with it?
Yeah.
And how do we communicate back effectively in a time frame that is acceptable? And obviously, you know, there needs to be some flexibility in that. But I think it's a really important area for businesses to look at.
Managing people's expectations to what's going to happen.
Rob?
I think visibility of customer complaints is really important. I've had some exposure to that recently. But more so is customers being able to complain and feedback to the organization rather than just leave the product completely, which probably tend to happen more often than not, unless you were really motivated to make a complaint and it was easy to do so, accessible to do, to actually make the complaint, rather than just say, okay, I'm just not going to use this product then.
Yeah.
I mean, the way we describe it in our training is all, you know, all feedback is a gift. Because actually anybody giving you feedback is effectively allowing you to know that you can do something to actually stop them leaving. You know, when I was at the BBC, it's the perfect place to learn this sort of stuff, because everyone had already paid for the BBC services. So so people weren't shy of complaining when they saw things that they didn't like. I went to the customer call service centre as part of my induction into the organisation and listened in on some of the sort of calls that were coming in. And it was really, really fascinating. Huge amount of respect for the call centre people who were trying to deal with some pretty angry people on occasions. And you know, one of the things that I learned from that was that all of these sort of customer complaints come in all sorts of different ways. You know, at the time it was just the call centre and emails, but these days it's things like Twitter. And the thing about Twitter, which is an absolute nightmare, is that that is your customers complaining about you in public. And that gets, that's even worse, because effectively if you can't deal with that in the right sort of way, then suddenly it can go viral.
And train companies come from in for a lot of stick on Twitter. And what the points we're making is it's about completing the circle, isn't it? It's that actually, so when you do get feedback, it's about handling it right, but then actually making changes to your organisation. Sometimes in development projects, you can sort of like, you realise, you know, you can almost be sort of like sort of stuck in there and developing for yourself, and you need to realise that you're developing, you know, for everyone, and so including people, you know, to explaining to people what's going on. I've seen a lot of websites I've worked, organisations work with, where there's a lot of good instructions for customers in plain language, and then you work for other organisations where there are hardly any instructions on how to use it. So it's about like leading people in, you know, it's not just about the accessibility experience, it's about like people understanding you can make a website that is totally accessible that's really hard to use.
Yeah, so certainly, I mean, you know, just making sure that people don't have a reason to complain, you know, make your product good, because either you need to spend your money on people who can do that, or you need to spend your money on people who can apologize for it all of the time. How about this? Disabled people want to use the web as much as everyone else. And actually most organizations, when they're, you know, when we go in, every single sort of project that we're working on is some form of digital transformation project. You know, it's hardly ever the case that we're, you know, helping an organization creating something completely from scratch. There's been a previous version that you could get in a branch or via a call center or whatever. So for me, that, you know, one of the big things, and certainly one of the things that I've learned recently, and I want to give a call out to a guy called James Hall at Horlicks, who let me in on this information, not just me, but a load of people at the London Accessibility Meetup last year. If you haven't been to the meetup, it's a really great thing. You can find it online. He works with a lot of local councils, governments, and these are the different costs of dealing with queries that come from various different things. So it costs about 17p to deal with a query if it comes online, £5 if that query is being dealt via a call centre, and £14 if people actually have to drop into the branch. Those are the economics of digital transformation. That's why we all have a job. So to say, well, actually, accessibility isn't really important, sort of, you know, 20% of the people, do they really need to be able to use our mobile app, our website? You know, if they're having a bad experience, you're taking them potentially from 17p up to £5 or even more to deal with that. And so I think there's a lot there to be gained. Let's move on. That assumes that people are already customers. That assumes that, if you like, they're self-serving on that website because they've already bought it, maybe it's dealing with a bank account or something like that. But what about the purchasing power of people who have disabilities? You know, if you don't make your retail website accessible to someone with a disability, then are you losing huge amounts of information? We hear about this all of the time. What do you reckon about that?
I think that the slight problem is a quite a big figure which you can't really relate to. I think we probably need to bring it down and make it more real.
So this is the £249 billion every year.
Yeah, it's just a stat, and the reality is, how does that equate to a customer actually going in and using? You know, I think there is a bit of a gap in terms of, you know, how is this perceived? It's great to have a number, but how does this relate to a particular organisation? I think there's a gap here, and I think we need to probably look at this and say, how could we better communicate the fact that disabled people and their families? I think it's important to understand, you know, disabled people often have families and relatives that will kind of want to kind of support and help them, and they will use the same services because if they find that, you know, they can use them, their families will as well.
Yeah.
So there's that connection, and it maybe needs to be teased out a bit more. Loads of people in the community have money to spend, but we need a better way, I think, to communicate how that relates to, you know, their day-to-day kind of purchasing activity.
Sure. I mean, the thing I tend to think about is Field of Dreams. If you build it, then they'll come. You know, it's kind of like, okay, so my website at the moment is not accessible. I make it accessible. So do I suddenly get a deluge of disabled people who are going, thank God, at last, you know, and sort of like rushing in and sort of like, you know, making my bank account, you know, sort of like go through. It would be nice to think that that were the case. Do we have proof? Do we have proof?
I think that's always been the problem. This figure grows every year, year on year, and it should be the main selling point for business with regards to accessibility. Your website will potentially be opened up to more people, enabling them to spend their money with you. Why would you want to exclude anybody from being able to buy on your website? It's there as one of the key drivers. But I still don't think businesses take it seriously, basically. So we do need those case studies of where people have put the effort in to make their site accessible and seen that uplift. That's where we really start to win with this type of information.
The really important point also is how those changes are communicated.
Yeah. So, case studies. So you go to the W3C WAI, the Web Accessibility Initiative website, and you will find the business case for accessibility, where some of these things are at. You know, it's not just us talking about it. People are talking about this all over the world. And one of the things that they have on there is from 2005. So this is how, like, you know, fresh and new this particular one is. This is Legal and General. It would be really great to have something from at least this decade, you know, on that website to kind of say, hey, you know, in 2019, or if not 2016, when people made things more accessible, it was better. But let's just look at that kind of like Legal and General case. You know, they did prove quite conclusively on that website. They had a website that wasn't doing particularly well. They made it more accessible, and they made more money. They had a lot more people getting all the way through that process to buying that insurance policy. Their transaction funnels, people got all the way through. So, you know, that's a massive win for accessibility, yeah? But the thing that I always kind of like worry about, because I know the people who worked on that, I know what they did, and it wasn't just accessibility the way we think about it in terms of screen readers and stuff. What they did was they actually took apart all the language, all of the complex language on that website. You know, they were looking at things for the 5.2 million adults that have sub GCSE level English. You know, the average reading age of the UK is 9. Trying to make things really, really simple. And I've banged on about it, and I'll keep on banging on about it until they change it in WCAG. We need to get simple in terms of language back into there. And it seems to me that if we can just get people thinking more simply in terms of the language that they use, then people will get a huge amount of return on investment from that.
It's a really important part that is kind of like the Cinderella, if you like, of mm-hmm. kind of accessibility. But it also is part of that wider picture. You need the navigation, you need the kind of pages, you need the labelling to all be simple, clear, and, you know, effective. And I think content is that thing that really joins it all up and makes it a good experience to use a website rather than a chore. Because as we were saying, you can have a technically good accessible website, but it's a really challenging thing to use because the content is obscure, the language is used is very marketing, and you don't get the kind of clarity about what you're trying to do. So yeah. I think content is a really core part. As you say, I think it's really important that we look at that, and it is something that is looked at more. And I know 2.1, the new guidelines that are coming in, does a little bit. Not a great deal, a tiny bit. And it needs to be more, it tiptoes in the right direction. But I think you're right, it's one thing that got lost when we moved from version 1 of WCAG to version 2.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important that, you know, as a community, that we can explore that.
Yeah.
And let's hope with the next version of the guidelines, we can start to integrate some of those.
Fingers crossed. I mean, it is hard to get right. You know, I'm going to put my hands in the air here. We are doing our new version of our website at the moment, and I wrote a lot of the initial content for it, and it's too complicated. But at least I have a great team around me who are able to say, actually, I don't think everybody's really going to understand that, Jonathan. Maybe we need to get in a copywriter who would be able to both make that simpler to understand, but get the tone of language, the tone of voice, right across all of the site, because we think that if we do that, then people are gonna think better about us and the sorts of things we do as an organization. A lot of the time in accessibility, we are too complicated. I am too yeah. complicated.
I think it's also important that the reality with much, probably more with commercial sites, is you're always gonna have a little bit of tension between the marketing on a website and the clarity of language. So there needs to be some balance with that as well. And I think it's how can we be creative in that area as well? Because I know we've been thinking about marketing as a kind of area to explore and get some training in. And I think it's something that would be quite a challenging area to kind of say to marketeers, you know, we need to be more accessible to how the language, you know, how can we be creative in that field? How can we work with them rather than put them as the kind of, oh, you're getting it wrong? We need to kind of explore that. I think that's a really important area.
I think if it can be sold as this is a benefit for all customers, not just a certain group of customers, then that's
yeah, I think that's really important, Rob. That kind of, how do we kind of join it up and make it a win-win?
We're not siloed,
Yeah, absolutely. And that would be the same, you know, about pretty much all of the things that we're talking about here. You know, customer complaints, they go into the wrong email box or whatever, they don't get treated very well, and that's generally where lawsuits arrive. Back to where we were, you get your website more accessible. And hopefully you get more people coming to the website. You know, it would be really good to prove it. I think that's one of the things that I've been obsessed with for as long as I can remember, really. In the it's all well and good to have the theoretical kind of understanding that if you do the right thing, good things will come back to you. But that's not the way that analytic professionals work. The way they work is, I want to measure it. I want to look at it. And Rob, you were pointing out something that Apple have done recently with VoiceOver that kind of plays in that space.
Yeah, so the new version of iOS is actually, you're now able to switch on by default, you can track if somebody's using VoiceOver on their device. So this has caused a accessibility, security, privacy concern, which is really, really interesting. As you say, Jonathan, it's always been one of those things that we to prove the business case on how many people are actually coming to use your website. We need this kind of metrics, but again, we need to make sure that we don't switch things like this on by default. We give people the opportunity to opt out of any sort of tracking like that. So it's a very, very interesting topic, which is going to play out this year.
So these sort of things need to be kind of opt in rather than opt out, as it were. I mean, Graham, you know, because people do opt in, don't they? You've been working in the banking industry for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, back in the old days, Braille statements and things like that, you know, if I were blind and I had a bank account, I would need my statements in Braille, so therefore the bank would know that I had a particular sight condition that needed that.
Yes, definitely. In an organisation I used to work for, they certainly had a series of flags where people could, you know, if they needed special sort of like delivery of statements, like as you say, in Braille or whatever, there was a whole series of flags on their accounts which covered that sort of thing.
Yeah. Did you ever get any kind of like people saying, I don't want that?
No, because it was kind of not switched on by default, because the default setting was obviously you got printed paper statements. But it was something that people knew about, and they could opt to receive their statements in Braille if they wanted to. They were obviously giving their permission to do so. It's a bit like also they had a flag for, you know, I actually speak Welsh as well, which was one of the flags that the company had as well. So then from then on, everything was delivered to them in Welsh. So people did opt into it. So definitely, yeah.
Yeah. Somebody's abilities and disabilities are massively private to them.
And
you wouldn't want everybody in the world to have access to that information, especially if that disability is something which isn't visual. You know, if I had a cognitive difficulty or something like that, you wouldn't know if you looked at me. And so, and obviously a lot of people on the, in the disability community have experienced a lot of discrimination in the past, which has made them, I guess the word I use is squeamish.
Yes.
I guess the interesting thing is that it would be good for people to understand what a good sort of like supported opt-in way of saying, actually, I want a better service, and I'm quite happy for you to have some data to go with that, is in comparison to one where maybe the organisation tries to find things out about you that you didn't want.
I think that's really important, because, I mean, it's been possible for quite a while, certainly on mobile phones, to know whether or not people are using a screen reader. Mm. And in fact, a banking app that I use myself, if I have on my Android phone, if I have TalkBack running, actually the login process is completely different if I'm running TalkBack. Mm. So people are actually branching the functionality of their apps to cater for screen readers in a different way. But I think the issue that Rob is referring to here is very important, is that people have lost trust with companies like Facebook and Google and Apple about what it is that they're going to do with the data. Mm-hmm. So it might be okay to change the functionality of your product based on whether I'm running a screen reader, but then if I'm collecting stats on that, and it could be identified, then that's a completely different ballgame, isn't it, really?
I'm not totally sure, actually. If those stats are anonymised, I think
that's a matter of trust, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
That's a matter of trust.
Yeah.
Some people obviously don't care, but others are quite worried about like providing information for larger companies, like social media companies, etc.
Sure, absolutely. I guess the point here is that what we were saying earlier, which is that we look at that sort of like purple pound, we look at that 249 billion, and we kind of think, yeah, but people just aren't buying it. And the reason they're not buying it is they can't count it.
Yeah, yeah, I understand.
And I know from my side, I'm all for privacy, but I'm also all for communities actually helping themselves by saying that if we give you a certain amount of information in a certain way, then actually we might get a better experience on things. And that, just in a small way, in terms of those Braille statements, obviously those people did get a better experience.
Yeah.
But also, I think as a community, that proves to organisations that some of the things they're doing in accessibility are actually having a really good,
yes,
positive impact. Otherwise, you know, you have to try and find surveys and all those sorts of things, which don't really work either.
Mm.
It's a really hard one.
Still, you talk about the purple pound, but I think really important areas to think about customers, you know, they're growing. Everybody, you know, Western world, we're getting an older population, need to think about their needs. Well, they might not necessarily have, you know, category of a disability per se. Their needs are going to be very similar, you know, their vision, impairments, mobility areas. We need to think about those. And, you know, particular organisations want to keep their customers long term.
Yeah.
So they need to think about, you know, as a customer gets older, are we providing services and products that they can use effectively and easily? And I think it's a really important area to explore.
Yeah, my parents are in their 80s now, and no way would they think of themselves as disabled, but, you know, they do need things to be very clear, simple, easy to use. They don't like sort of pastel websites because they can't see them, but they never would see themselves as having a disability.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. And
so it's not so much just the purple pound, I think we're talking about the grey pound here as well.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously in the UK, this is people who do actually have quite a lot of money to spend on stuff.
Effectively, if we're looking at the older population as well, we're not just talking about, if you like, that 20% of the population that has a disability. We're actually maybe up to around sort of 60% of the population who needs this accessibility thing to be in their products to give them a good experience. And it's probably even more frustrating for them if they're losing some of their capabilities, the things that they were able to do in the past they're not able to do now. So yeah, another great reason that this is so important. I want to move on. Let's go to a completely different place for a second. One of the things that I found, and we're finding for actually two different types of customers. So we have some clients who create services that other clients then use to create web experiences from. So, you know, Graham and Mike Gifford last month were looking at CMSs, but also we've got things like if you had a service. So I had one client who did lots of training for volunteers, and they needed a means of booking that training, and so they bought a product off the shelf that was an online training booking system. So it didn't do the training, it just enabled that to happen, something that in the past had happened on a phone line. And they then suddenly realized, like about 5 minutes later, after they signed the bit of paper to buy this product, that they hadn't actually checked it was accessible. Suddenly they had a real problem. And I was in a situation in the room where I was having to say to the people who created the product, I know you don't have to, I know your contract doesn't say anything about accessibility in it, so you don't have to make this product accessible for my client, but please do, because actually they're in a real problem here and they need your product to be fixed. And so we were in this kind of really difficult situation for a while. Governments have been trying to use their purchasing power to change this over the years, things like Section 508 in the States and things like that. You know, VPATs and all of these sorts of things. So certainly for me, I think more and more going forwards, it would be really good for organisations who create products that other organisations take and then use to make them work in an accessible way. So one of the other things that people have been saying for years is that if you make your website accessible, kind of get some great SEO benefits, so search engine optimization, for those of you not in the know. You get some benefits for people to find your site better on Google if you make it more accessible. Rob, what do you reckon?
This is a really interesting one. I still think there are definite SEO benefits that we can get from accessibility. Not just SEO benefits, but code quality benefits as well. And one company I was working for, it was travel insurance, and it was ranked on Google. They made a few changes to the page. It was ranked on the first page of Google. They dropped off and made it much more accessible and got back onto the first page up to number two or even number one in the rankings. And the monetary effect of that was really, really huge. I mean, it's quite an old story now, but it was one of the ones that really woke me up with regards to how SEO can actually benefit accessibility as well.
Mm. Or vice versa, yeah. So accessibility benefiting the SEO. I agree, but presumably the things that mattered there were things like headings. And, well, headings, really. It's headings, yeah? I mean, headings are the thing.
What about alternate text for images? Alternative
text for images. I'm not so sure on that. So here's the theory about alternate text on images increasing your SEO for your website. So I go into Google image search looking for an image about something.
Yeah.
And then because it's kind of sort of tagged in the right way, so the alt text is sensible, I find that image, and then I go to the website and buy something. That's the theory, right? I don't think that holds. If I'm on Google image search, it's because I want an image of something, normally for a presentation. So I think it's quite cute that when I found that image, it will take me to the website. I don't think I've ever bought anything from any of those websites. Any thoughts? Because I think the SEO thing is a little bit overplayed. I like it on captions. So I think the stuff around captions, especially these days, is really, really right. It's normally the companies that kind of sell the captions that do it. So 3Play Media got loads of stuff out there about, you know, all of these sorts of things. But YouTube did a study. Videos with captions earn 4% more views than those that don't. You know, it's worth having. The other thing I think is really interesting there is they know. So back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of those stats. If they hadn't been counting, if there wasn't a way of saying, well, how many people are looking at videos compared to how many people are looking at captioned videos, if there wasn't a way of doing those stats, we wouldn't know that. Mm. So we couldn't say that actually making captions on your video is a good thing for you if you're creating a video. The only thing we'd have to look at is think people like CNET, who did some stuff on transcripts back in the day, where they reported a 30% traffic increase because of putting transcripts there, because all of the stuff in the video wasn't being indexed by the search engine. So by pulling all of the text out of it, putting it on a page, you've got some good stuff. But again, my feeling is that SEO, yeah, back in the day, Robert, as I say, I completely agree, those sorts of things where people had just had no idea about headings and that sort of stuff, massively valuable for SEO. But these days, I think we need to be really careful that we don't overstep the bounds on thinking, hey, you know, if you do accessibility, you get that for free. Because actually, a lot of the time, SEO is about keywords and all the rest of it, which sometimes can actually play against accessibility in some of those headings.
Well, we need an SEO expert.
We do. Let's bring one along next time.
We've talked about external websites, but also thinking about internal websites, mm-hmm. kind of like organizations with employees.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff we've talked about also relates to kind of internal intranets, websites, and kind of using, you know, it's often campaigns to bring kind of people with disabilities in as employees, but are the systems in place? Mm. Do they work? Do they have the right technology? There's nothing more frustrating than being employed and finding you don't have the right kit and you can't use the same systems. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a whole area that probably needs, you know, and a whole section of itself. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, as organizations get more kind of skilled and aware of accessibility externally, mm-hmm. I think they should bring those lessons in and focus also on internal, you know, internally and employees. And I think that's often an area which, you know, it's not so well known, but I think mm-hmm. it's a really important one that organisations can actually see some real benefits with as well.
Yeah.
Particularly if you think about the diversity of employment that can bring in, that new ways of thinking, new ways of trying things out. I think there's a great opportunity there as well.
Yeah, and also if you're bringing those disabled people into your organisation, you're likely to get better at accessibility anyway because you have someone in your team who needs it. So creating products that don't work for the person sitting next to you, very few people kind of think that's a great idea. So I think actually, yeah, these things are in a kind of virtuous circle. Hey, let's end with some really, really positive stuff. The thing that I think that people miss, but I think people are starting to get to in accessibility, is that if you do it, the PR is really good. You know, we talked earlier about Apple. You know, everyone thinks Apple is brilliant at accessibility. They probably have bad days, that person found, products that don't quite rise to the level they wanted. But how do we know that Apple are so brilliant at accessibility? Because they tell us often. They've won awards all over the place. And again, that's probably the other way of actually bringing disabled people to your site. If you've made it more accessible, to me, it seems like awards are underused in our area. I want to see more awards out there. Actually, it's less for the people who made the sites, although certainly if you got an award, you feel better about it. We've won loads, and it's always a good thing. Every time you win an award, it makes people more likely to kind of give you money to do accessibility in the future. But I'm also interested in people who have disabilities. They want to know where the good accessible things are, the good accessible sites. What is the most accessible retailer? You know, what is the most accessible video on demand service? Actually giving awards for doing the right thing, I think is something which is kind of underestimated. And I think the innovation that kind of comes out of stuff as well. We are now not putting stuff out there about Microsoft and their Xbox Adaptive Controller and how wonderful the controller is and how fabulous the box of that controller is, because everybody, it seems, is talking about it out there. You know, just a few little steps to say, let's do something different and actually go beyond where most people are thinking about accessibility has brought them a lot of kudos. So certainly for me, I think that if you do accessibility well and talk about it lots, then you can have a lot of really good stuff coming out of it. Any final points from anybody?
One thing that's interesting for me is what I would like to see. When it comes down to procurement, if there was two vendors in the running, I would like to see the vendor who has taken on accessibility or maybe even won an award for their product gain that. If the costings were the same, they actually win the business based on putting the effort in, the time and effort to make their product more accessible. I'd like to see that. It's almost positive discrimination for equal products with regards to accessibility in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And most governments in the US and Europe would completely agree with you. In fact, they won't buy the product that doesn't have that. So it's if you like, it's up to everyone else to fall in behind that. Thanks so much, guys. Hopefully people on the call are now thinking, okay, that was a lot of stuff about what good things can happen when you get accessibility right. So thanks everybody for your insights, your examples, stuff from your experience over time. This is a big one for us, so we're gonna touch on this again in the future, because as far as we're concerned, all of the work that you do with organisations like ourselves here at Hassle Inclusion, we want our clients to not just have accessible products coming out of their work with us. We want them to actually achieve their business goals. We want them to get all of these great benefits from return on investment. So if that sounds like you as an organisation, please get in touch. We really do care about this stuff. Thanks everyone for today, and a lot more next month.